This is Derek Favors, number 15 from the Utah Jazz. You're listening to Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini.
3-point game, Harris. Pick and roll, Favors takes a strong and one. Oh my, watch Derek Favors take a leap right here.
Three games deep into the new NBA season. In fact, we have game three of the Utah Jazz coming up tonight right here on KOAL. Utah looking to recover from a loss to the Minnesota Timberwolves. Now they'll take on Oklahoma City tonight. Live coverage at 5:50. Tip-off will follow at 6 p.m. David Locke, Ron Boone will bring you the play-by-play call. We'll talk Utah Jazz basketball, and we'll bounce around the entire league. Joining us right now to do that, we have Jameson Welsh. He joins us each Monday to set up a brand-new week of the NBA. And Jameson, I hope you had a Merry Christmas. And, of course, now with the season off and rolling, it's a fun time, especially with the really short offseason that we got.
Yeah, it's it seems like the season's in rolling. It just picks up. There's not a whole lot else to say. It's one of those things where things is back to normal, like it never left, and that's kind of where we're at with it. It's pretty fascinating when you think about it. But the NBA season has a bunch of games on every day. We unfortunately have our first big injury of the season with Spencer Dinwiddie getting hurt, partially torn ACL, pretty much out for the rest of the season. It's going to be a battle of attrition. As long as you're able to stay healthy and everyone knows their roles, teams that are going to contend are going to contend.
The Dinwiddie injury is it's very sad because this is a guy that was looking for some sort of a payday going into this next offseason. Yet with that being said, there's an injury history there. So I'm curious to see how long it takes, and this may sound bad, but I'm curious to see how long it takes for the first nagging injury to hit a player that went through the entire bubble and legitimately got 2 months off. Now, that's not a lot of time.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. I mean, it really wasn't a true 2 months because, once everything was over, you kind of had to, take a week or two to kind of just settle down and just get out of that mindset. And the next thing you know, it was September, and then you're back to it again. So it was just it was pretty fascinating how everything shook out. You know what I mean? It was very fascinating how everything played out with this situation. Because you think about it like this. The Lakers and what they went through last year and the minutes those guys had to play in and the bubble and everything like that. For them to come back, they have a really good general manager because a lot of teams just would have ran it back. We had an example back in 2011 where the season, obviously there's lockout, and the Mavs just kind of ran it back. They didn't improve the team. They just ran it back. The Lakers got more deadlier. They improved the roster immensely. They got rid of Danny Green, brought in, Schroeder, and then they bring in Montrezl Harrell, who, he's an undersized big. He plays very well on offensive end. So, that to me is that their leadership in front office is the key.
Yeah, when you look at this Laker team, defending world champs look good so far. I know they suffered a loss on December 22nd to the Clippers, but after that, this team has been rolling, and we saw it last night. I know Minnesota had a very tough back-to-back, but still, with that being said, there are so many different ways this Laker team can beat you. I mean, they just look great in every avenue. The Marc Gasol experiment, I know it's really early, but boy, he looks like a perfect complement. They do this last night to Minnesota without Anthony Davis. The game was never in doubt. Dennis Schroeder looks fantastic. Kyle Kuzma played out of his mind. LeBron still looks good, looks healthy. I mean, all the way around, Jameson, I know it's so early, but as long as this team stays healthy, I just don't see anyone beating this team in a 7-game set. They look that good.
They look that good, and they have a lot. They have really good smart players, and that's the key. It's one thing to have talent, but we have intelligent players as well. Being able to add, Pau Gasol, being able to have Marc Gasol for the minimum, even though he's past his prime, just the knowledge he brings, knowing how to play, knowing how to shoot, that in itself is huge. It's a huge steal because most times you get a guy off the minimum, it is what it is. You got to get what you get. Like, Marc Gasol can still play. He's not the all-star starter that he once was in his career, anything like that, but he can still play the game of basketball. So having him out there for 20 minutes a night is huge because you have LeBron, who's obviously a smart player. You have Anthony Davis, who's obviously a smart player. So having Marc Gasol out there helps a lot of guys. No, it even helps a guy like Kuzma out because he's always cutting and slashing to the basket, and he gets like easy baskets like that that unlocks the rest of his game. So, again, those little small acquisitions and transactions are the ones that lead to greater success.
Now, while the Lakers looked fantastic, the Clippers got off to a great start, and again, they even beat the Lakers. This is a team that many expect to be there in the end to challenge the Lakers, yet without Kawhi Leonard, they're down 50 points at halftime. And over the course of an NBA season, you see things that are kind of eye-popping, but you really don't pay a lot of attention to it. I have to pay attention to this, Jameson. They were down 77-27 at halftime to the Dallas Mavericks without Kawhi Leonard. Is he that important to this team, or is this one of those things that we just kind of throw away?
So the Clippers had the late game on Friday. When I mean late, they had the 7:30 p.m. game, so it was 8:30 local time in Denver. The game lasts about 3 hours, so you leave the arena after midnight Saturday morning. And then you either travel back to the hotel and leave Saturday morning, or you leave that night. So you get back sometime Saturday. You have the early game Sunday, which no one likes. No one likes the early Sunday afternoon game at noon or 12:30, whatever you want to call it. So it's just a very bad situation. However, there is no excuse with the roster they have to be down by 50 by anybody. There is just no excuse. They have too much talent for that to happen, in my eyes anyway. I mean, I know they have their shortcomings. But come on, man, that's ridiculous. There's no way that should take place.
Let's talk about the Utah Jazz. Again, we're being joined right now by Jameson Welsh of BasketballNews.com. We'll talk more about that in just a moment. The Jazz tonight take on Oklahoma City. They top the Blazers by 20 to open up the season. Portland doesn't look that great. Minnesota, who had one of the more difficult back-to-backs you'll have all year with the Jazz and the Lakers. Utah suffers a loss in that first game for Minnesota. And this was one of those contests where you look at two former Lakers, by the way, and D'Angelo Russell and Jordan Clarkson. They go toe-to-toe in this contest. Russell scored 25, Clarkson scored 23. When you look at this Jazz team, very short sample size, I understand that, but did they make the necessary improvements from what you've seen in the early parts of this season to say, okay, now they're a top three or four team of the West?
Well, they could be a top four team out West. That's not really a thing. Like, you know, that's cool, but eventually, you got to be able to, with the salary they're paying out, when you look at the max contracts they've offered out in the last few weeks and the money they have on the books now, you're expected to win a championship or compete for a championship. Being top four out West is cool, but that really ain't it when you look at it. Me personally, when I look at the situation that the Jazz are in, they're stuck in a level of a higher version of a hamster wheel. When I mean that, the hamster wheel is an NBA stuck between like the 6th and 10th seed. They're basically doing the same thing every year. You're not bad enough to be in the lottery, and you're not good enough to be a competitor. Now, they're in the second-round hamster wheel, which means that they'll be competing in the first round. They may get out of that, but the second round comes, they're going to lose because they're just not good enough. And I just don't think that's the smart way to do things with the salary cap situation that they're in. Now, with that being said, they have some pieces they can move and some things they can do to improve their roster, but right now I look at a team that has a second round ceiling, and I don't like signing Rudy Gobert to $200 million. He's a very good player for what they do, but signing a one-dimensional player to that kind of money limits your ceiling, and that has never worked out, and this is going to be another situation where it just does not work out.
Yeah, I mean, the Jazz were in a tough spot as far as the salaries are concerned. Obviously, re-upping Donovan Mitchell's a no-brainer. There's no question about that. And you and I had talked about Rudy Gobert a lot over the course of the offseason and what they should actually pay him. I guess they got a little bit of a discount. Still, you're looking at $205 million. But when you look around the rest of this roster, there's not a lot of room for maneuvering. I mean, Joe Ingles has 2 years and $22 million left on his contract. That's important. Derek Favors is locked up for the next three seasons, counting this one. I guess you can look at Mike Conley, and maybe that's a contract that at some point in time this season you could move for some pieces. $34 million this year, final year of his deal. But the bulk of this roster, when you look at the $19, $18 million that Bojan Bogdanovic is going to make over the next couple of seasons, this team, for the most part, is what it is, right? And so you have to hope, if you're a Jazz fan, you have to hope that Quinn Snyder can mold your key pieces, Gobert, Bogdanovic, Clarkson, Favors, Mitchell. You have to hope that he can mold these pieces to forming a championship-level team into the Western Conference. I'm just going to be real. It ain't happening with those five.
It's not, like, not for what they're trying to do. Now, if they're trying to make the playoffs and be competitive, cool. But, you know, at the end of the day, your goal is to win a championship. And when you're repaying luxury tax, you got to be in the, you know, mind frame of, hey, if we're paying the tax, we got to be in it. And I just don't think that's the case right now. I really don't. Now, I could be wrong. You know, I've been wrong before, been wrong again, and these things do happen. But look at the Jazz team and their, you know, with how they're, you know, configured. It looks like a team that is going to be a, you know, and like you said, the top four out west, maybe the fourth seed, playing a team as at the five seed who's really good that can give them a run. And then the second round, the inevitable happens.
Yeah, and just to point this out, I do not blame Dennis Lindsay. It's a tough spot to be in. It really is. I mean, free agency has not been kind to Utah over the past decade or so, and you have someone like Gobert, who is a defensive player of the year, and as you pointed out, does a lot of great things for what they want to do. This is the structure of the current collective bargaining agreement in which smaller markets have to overpay to keep talent. And while it seems like a good idea on paper, Jameson, this, in my mind, it will fall in line alongside a long, a list of smaller markets overpaying to keep good talent, not great talent, at great talent prices.
So here's the thing. No one's going to Utah unless they have a connection through Delta that's getting them to their favorite destination. All right? It's not happening. You get drafted by the Jazz, or you get traded by the Jazz. You're not getting a marquee free agent unless it's like a sign trade or something like. I can't name the last high profile free agent that had Utah on the list. So with that being said, you have to do things like overpay for Rudy Gobert.
Yep.
You have to lock up Donovan Mitchell, which they should have. Yeah, that's a good move. But you have to draft extremely well, and you got to find, you know, guys that are undrafted free agents and hitting gyms at a very high rate. Because if you don't, you're put in a really bad spot. And that's kind of where they're at right now. But with that being said, hey, I will say this. They do have a player in Donovan Mitchell that can hold his own against anyone for a game. However, over a series, it's very difficult for a guy at 6'3 to do those things that Donovan Mitchell tries to do over a long series. One game, two games, cool. But over a series versus bigger players and better players, very difficult.
Let's end with this, Jameson. We'll talk about the widespread of the league, kind of a vague question. We'll talk about the biggest surprise over the course of three games for you. And I'll start. I am pleasantly surprised at how crisp Kevin Durant looks. I know this is one of the greatest scores, one of the most unique scores we have ever seen in the history of the league. I get that. But you just never know how someone is going to respond from an Achilles injury, especially after missing an entire season, right? This guy comes out, 26 points a game is what he's averaging over the course of three games so far. Small sample size, I get it. But the eye test does a lot. I'm surprised he looks this good. What's your biggest surprise up to this point in time?
That's not the biggest surprise for me, because he had 500 days off from his last game to now, so not really surprised at that. Happy, definitely happy, but the Cavaliers being undefeated is a surprise to me. Now, we know what it's going to eventually end up being, but, you know, them being, I believe they're 3-0, if I'm not mistaken.
They are. They're 3-0, and if you look in that division, the Pacers are 3-0, while the Bucks are 1-2, and I tend to stray away from that because over the course of 72 games, we know what's going to happen. We know who's going to win that division.
Yeah, but it's surprising. Like, when you look at the standing, you see the Cavs at 3-0, you're like, whoa, and then you look at the situation, Colin Sexton and Darius Garland are actually playing pretty good. And you look at it like, I remember when they drafted Garland, they were like, I don't know. But Colin Sexton's the pick they got from the Kyrie trade, and it looks like it's panning out. So there's some good stuff there. I mean, at least there is something to get happy about if you're a Cavs fan. But being 3-0, yeah, I don't remember them being 3-0 before. So this is a good thing for them.
Yeah, they're being 3-0, and I know that you're a big fan of Sabonis. Indiana at 3-0 as well. It's a good story. Still, at the end of the day, Milwaukee wins that division. There's no question. They're 1-2. They'll bounce back. They'll power their way through in that division. It's only a matter of time. That's a good point. Cleveland at 3-0. Jameson Walsh, you get a basketballnews.com, our guest today here on the show. Jameson, before I let you go, let the listeners know where they can find more of you.
Basketballnews.com, ESPN 1100, ESPN 1480, and then, of course, here.
Jameson, always a pleasure. Look forward to doing it again next week. Thank you.
Thanks for having me, as always. Definitely appreciate it.
We're going to break for just a moment. More Drive Time Sports coming up when we return right here on 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM.